You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Hello and welcome to Ironcast. We've got a big guest for you today, a big co-host as well, Anton Ferdinand's here.
Thank you.
92 appearances for West Ham, 33 goals. Freddie's going to get you. Welcome back to West Ham, Freddie Canute.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Oh, man. You're still for me, a box office name. I'm so glad you're back at West Ham. It took a while. I remember, like, going back, your debut for West Ham was just... It's a game everyone talks about, but for not necessarily for you, because it's the same game in which Paolo Di Canio scores the scissor kick, Wimbledon, at home. Yeah. But you scored down the other end as well. We went 2-1, and the West Ham fans are chanting, "Harry, sign him up." Do you remember that?
I remember perfectly that day. I was almost going to be the star of the day, but Paolo just nicked it away from me. But yeah, it was a fantastic day. It was like, for me, it was tough because I was changing club. I was just like, I hardly trained for West Ham. And the weekend arrived, I play, I score. And yeah, it was really, really, I remember that day. It was really beautiful. Yeah.
It was a good goal, by the way. Yeah. I know everyone talks about Paolo's goal, but your goal to be your first goal at West Ham on that angle, first time at the near post. It was a fantastic goal. And one thing that, because I was at the game as a fan, I was watching, obviously watching Rio. But the biggest thing was watching you and seeing how laid back you are, you know, and as you probably understood the further you went on into your West Ham career, sometimes being laid back doesn't help you here because they want to see the fans want to see fight.
Yeah,
you know, but to see the way you were so laid back but done your job, laid back, confident, done your job, and the way that the fans accepted you for that.
Yeah,
for me, watching it from that first day, you couldn't have gone any better. So I'd see the fans singing, sign him up. How did that feel to you, knowing that you came to a new place and that was happening?
Yeah, no, it felt good. But I think your analysis is very interesting because obviously since the academy, some coaches were like criticizing me for being too laid back. I could do much more. And I had a particular coach, I remember, in Lyon, who was like after me big time. You know, he was pushing me and I've improved a lot with that guy. You know, it was old school, you know, at the time they couldn't care less about how they speak to the youngsters. So it was very tough on me. But it's true that this is a criticism that I've received a few times. And I remember when I arrived here, you know, the fighting spirit here and sometimes even if you know that the ball is going out the pitch, you have to chase it and even tackle to try to, even if you know you're not. And I was not like this, to be honest. And but still, I think, as you said, it matched at some point. They understood my style and I was still obviously fighting and learned a lot from my period in West Ham, because it was like week in, week out, like fighting against monsters mm-hmm. at the back, etc. So yeah, no, I learned a lot. I mean, yeah, straight away, I have to tell you, West Ham will stay in my heart because that's the first team, team away from home, from back home, Lyon. I grew up in Lyon. And that's where I really learned to become and start playing as a man and live my life as a man and mm-hmm. and learn how to deal with with good moments and low moments as well, etc. So yeah, no, for me it's a big period of my life.
Wicked. Yeah. I was chatting to Anton because I thought that Wimbledon goal, I can't remember if you take it on your left foot, but I always thought you were left-footed. But Anton was saying to me, you were good on both feet, like in defending in training sessions. You were just as good on both foot. What foot? Are you both footed?
No, I'm right-footed, but I think from the academy, from the academy time, we learned a lot to work with both feet. Training session, it was like you have to be comfortable with both feet. So that's why I scored a few goals with my shooting with my left foot as well when I was playing. But I think but I'm right-footed. But it's just like I'm comfortable to use both feet. Yeah,
thinking about to your debut, I remember at the time thinking like you were a relative unknown. It was back in the day when it was relatively rare to get like big foreign signings mm-hmm. come in, and West Ham fans didn't know anything about you. But looking back, you had played 40 times for Lyon before you came to us. You mm-hmm. scored 9 goals. Mm-hmm. So you were, how come the transfer happened? Because it looked like going through your stats, you were playing fairly regularly, like in and out of the team.
This is interesting. I think maybe you have to ask Harry because I heard a story, but maybe you can confirm with him. He actually came to watch a game, which was, if I'm not wrong, Olympique Lyon in Marseille. But he was actually following him or maybe his scout or whoever. He was following another player. And I played that game away from home in Marseille. And when I had a little argument with my club in Lyon and I was looking to go out the club, I think he was in contact with maybe my agent at the time was Pape Diouf, big agent at the time in France. And he said, oh, yeah, I know which player you're talking about. And I saw him in Marseille, etc. And that's how it came about. So he knew me from somewhere, like from some games I've played in France, but I don't really know how it happened.
Yeah, so did Harry speak to you? How did the deal work?
No, at the time it was all through my agent. He told me that I had a little as I said, misunderstanding argument with my club at the time. So I didn't have any club. So I was literally training on my own in a park every day thank God it didn't last too long, like 5-6 days, and that offer came. And that's why I say when I came for the first game, I had like maybe 10 days without proper training at a game, nothing.
That's hard, by the way, you know, that not training with a team and then having to come and train with a team for 10 days and then play.
Could you speak English as well? Or?
School English, like
the basics.
Yeah. But when I arrived, like East London, I said they lied to me at school for all these years. this is not English I learned. Or on one side, there's something wrong, but I don't know which side.
And when you arrived at West Ham, obviously the team that you arrived in was full of fantastic players who became great players, not just for West Ham, but for England.
Yeah.
You know, did you know anything about the young players that were coming through at the time, the likes of Rio, Lampard,
Joe,
Carrick? Do you know anything about them?
I didn't know much, but just when I arrived, to be honest, I didn't even know much about West Ham. I knew the club, obviously, but I was not really following in detail. And as soon as I arrived, everybody made sure I understand what kind of club it was. And they spoke about all the youth, the good youth system and all the youth that are pushing in the first team. And so straight away, I came across like Joe, Rio, Frank, Michael, I mean, it was a fantastic team, and it was a good blend, because there was also very experienced players as well, and it was a really exciting team. Yeah,
how did you fit in? Because you say there were senior players that day. You're quite quiet, composed, but then you had the likes of John Moncur.
He was
crazy, as everyone speaks about. Neil Ruddock. He was crazy. How did you fit into that?
First of all, the setup for me was completely different, because it was very much, you were talking about laid back, but I think here in Western, when I arrived, I thought it was quite laid back, because in France, this is very, very disciplined, especially when you come from like some of the big clubs, big academies. Yes. You couldn't use your mobile. You on the bus on the way to the game, you couldn't really speak with your mate or laugh or stuff like this. And I arrived here and it was like completely different. It was very much more relaxed, etc. I arrived to my first game against Wimbledon in the dressing room. First of all, you could dress the way you want with a suit. You remember?
Yes.
With a suit, but you could choose the way.
Yes.
By the way, Rio is the champion in choosing the right. It was like picking some colors. Yeah. And some, I say, wow, this is like... And I
wore them years later because they got handed down to me.
Good.
I wore them.
That's a good thing.
I wore them.
And the first day I arrived in the dressing room, the music like very loud, people like talking, laughing. And so I said, wow, this is like, for me, it felt like refreshing. And I got on well with everyone, but I saw some very, very funny characters. And at the beginning, I couldn't understand a word, to be honest. I just noticed everybody was laughing every time John Moncur was speaking, etc.
Yes.
But
brilliant.
And, like, how was it like training in Chadwell Heath? I guess back in 2000, I guess you're not having like player services, there's no one to help you settle in. Were you kind of like just left to your own devices a little bit? Like,
yeah, I mean, I arrived in at the training ground, and you know, in France we have a habit which is every morning you arrive and you shake hands with everyone.
Yeah,
and in some countries it's like this.
Slaven Bilic used to do that, didn't he? I think he used to come
exactly.
When he was manager. Yeah.
So I arrive, I don't know anybody. I arrive in the dressing room, and I start shaking hands with people. Were turning their back, so I just tap their back and I say okay, and they were looking at me like I'm crazy. And I remember Marc, Vivien Foé, he was there in the dressing room. There was him speaking French, and Marc Keller. And Marco, Vivien Foé, told me, no, you don't need to do that here. You just say hi in the morning and that's it. But the first day I remember was like just greeting everyone, etc. But it was. I think straight away I got the first, because my first game was like 3-4 days after I arrived, and I scored. So it helped me big time to settle in, and that's it.
Yeah, on that game Wimbledon, Paolo scores, you score, and it felt like straight away you and Paolo seemed to have a really good connection. Did it feel like that?
Yeah. I mean, you all know him, very talented. Very crazy. We were very different. But I think, in terms of the pitch is something else, you know, and we got on well on the pitch. Was really nice and an honor to play alongside him and see his talent and genius, you know. I think we had all together a very talented team. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back to my young Anton as a fan, and I remember watching you right from the stand at Upton Park, and then when a ball got played to you from a goal kick, the way you'd get up in the air and hang in the air, and at first everyone's thinking you're going to head it, but then you just bring it down on your chest. Yeah. The way you hung, and I remember watching it going, wow, that is unbelievable. How's he hanging in the air like that? Did you always have that, or did that come into fruition when you signed for West Ham?
Look, I'm gonna tell you a little secret. Before coming to West Ham, I had hardly played centre forward.
Really?
Wow.
Almost never.
What?
So I grew up playing I've played on the side, like winger. I've played midfield, number 6, number 8. I've played, yeah, but it's only when I, as a professional with the first team of Lyon, I've played either on as a winger or if it was a 4-4-2, sometimes I was on the side,
mm-hmm.
Or 4-3-3, I was also a winger, more on the side, and but I've played a few games as number 9, also in Lyon, mm-hmm. but not many, and it's only when I arrived in London that's it. I'm a number 9 now, and you can see my stats when I arrive in West Ham. They're not great.
It's not bad for a goal in every 3 games, pretty much.
Yeah, but what I mean is that it's not like, because everybody says that it's when I arrive in Seville that really I scored many, many goals. But I think I was still in the learning process of how being a number nine and more efficient, because I remember the first games I was playing, I was almost out of place. I was moving a lot, getting the ball in my feet, dribbling a lot. I remember there was an interesting stat in my beginning of West Ham. The first few months, I was one of the players who was making more dribbles, and I said, "Yeah, there is something wrong, because at the end of the day, you know, I'm the number 9. I'm doing all this work for the teammates, etc., but I'm not really being at the end of the play to finish off the actions." And I started to learn a little bit and to be a little bit more efficient, to be there every time there's a cross, to be more like, and I kept on working on that throughout my career. Yeah,
this is a mad thing to say, but I don't remember you being this tall. Like when you came in, I think it's because you were never really like a target man. It wasn't like a big Andy Carroll. I mean, you've got the height for it, but you were playing with us like so much more with the ball at your feet. Yeah. I don't know if that's how we played at the time.
Yeah,
it's weird.
Yeah, like, I guess because I was not really a number 9 before, because I learned to play ball in the feet. I've played midfielder a lot. I've played on the right side, so I was able to dribble as well, go on 1v1 situation, and maybe that's why I was not really the kind of target man. I could do that, and I learned to do that to be more as a target man. But I think it allowed me to be a little bit more flexible and complete in terms of my style. So I could ask the ball in the feet, but I could go also in space. People were thinking I was not so quick, but I was actually...
He was.
So it allowed me to adapt a little bit to the situation, yeah.
Yeah. So you came on loan straight from your debut. You're playing incredibly, and I remember West Ham has really wanted you to sign, and in the summer of 2000 it actually happens. You become a permanent West Ham player. Was there any debate around it? Was it always going to be the fact you were signing for West Ham?
No, for me there was no debate from my first game. When you know, I knew it went well. I learned really afterwards that like they wanted to sign me. For me there was no question. I wanted to stay here.
It's crazy because you know what? A lot of players have this. I say it all the time, but a lot of players have this. West Ham has this impact on a lot of players. Mm. You know, and to hear it from you, Freddie, I think it just reiterates how special the football club is. You know, because everybody that comes here, they get a rapport with the fans.
Yeah.
They love playing in front of the fans.
Yeah.
And it almost comes a place where this is where I need to be and where I want to be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So to hear that from you, someone coming from Lyon on loan and then signing permanently, it just reiterates how special this football club is.
Yeah,
true.
In your second season, I want to talk about one pass for a goal you created. Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea? 01-02 season. I'll give you a clue. It was at Old Trafford. Through to Paolo Di Canio in the fourth round.
Yeah.
And I think this is perfect kind of Freddie Canute, because you've got the ball at your feet at Old Trafford and you always seem to have so much time on your hands. And you see when you watch it back, Paolo makes that little run in behind and then as cool as you like, you just slot it through.
Yeah. It's like, when he
Barthez keeps his hands on.
Yeah. I remember.
Did you think it was offside?
No, I was hoping he was not falling into Barthez's trap. I was hoping because I felt he was not offside. So at least I was hoping he was not like being disturbed, etc. But Paolo is like, was already experienced player, so it didn't work with him.
I wonder, because I watched it back and I saw after the goal goes in, you were kind of the last to join the celebrations. And I wondered whether you were just hanging back like, he's going to put his flag up. He's going to like, because you had a better view of it than anyone.
Yeah. No, but it's true that players generally, we always, the first one being cautious about, the offside rule, being a bit cautious. But on that particular instance, I felt it was onside, yeah.
Yeah. We actually had a good cup run. This is one of many years that I thought we were going to win the cup that year because we beat Manchester United. But we played Tottenham at Upton Park in the quarterfinals, I think it was, and lost 3-2 in a game that just seemed to go end to end. And it seemed like we might do it, but it just fell away at the last minute. That felt like a real chance to win something during your time.
Yeah. And I got introduced very early to these kind of games, you know, against Tottenham, Arsenal, and the rivalry between those clubs, etc. I mean, this is a big thing in London. Where in Europe, you can see so many
derbies
like this. You know, this is crazy. So that was one of the big highlights playing here, yeah.
What was your favourite derby with West Ham? What was your favourite London derby?
To be honest, anyway, every time we were playing against big teams, for me, it felt like a derby. It didn't matter if it wasn't even in the same city, but playing against Arsenal, you have this special motivation, I feel. And you know, I'm not from London, so I don't have this. It's not personal. That's what I mean. It's not personal. I know, you know, when you grow up there and you want to smash, for example, Tottenham or Arsenal. Yes. For me, it was just like extra motivation because I felt straight away that, for the fans, for everyone, this is important game. And these are big teams as well around in London, so many big teams. So, we wanted to make a big point in showing that, we're the Hammers, you know what I mean? So straight away, I felt that passion,
All right, West Ham fans, one way you can support Ironcast and help us rocket up the charts and beat off the competition from other official football clubs podcasts like Chelsea and like Spurs is to get a 5-star rating or review from you. Support me and Ginger on the podcast, chuck us a 5-star rating and review and help us rocket up the charts where West Ham belong, at the top of the table. Back on with the show. So in the second season is the one where kind of Harry Redknapp departs. And if I had to put my finger on one thing that started to go wrong, it would seem the sale of Anton's brother Rio to Leeds at the time. It felt like that was the moment. We had all these amazing players, some of which we touched on there, Frank Lampard, Michael Carrick, Joe Cole, the list goes on. But when Rio left, it felt like we lost something as a team. Did it feel like that on the inside?
Rio was like, something. But it was difficult to cling onto him or to keep him much longer. It was like such a talent, and such a good guy, I have to say. You know, Rio, maybe you don't know that, but is the first... No, Marco was the first one. Marco Vivienfoy. He invited me to his place, etc. But Rio, after training, was telling me, okay, come with me. We're going to eat in a Caribbean restaurant. It was really, really friendly. And straight away, wanted me to feel good, etc. But on the pitch, it was like a monster. It was difficult to keep him much longer.
Yeah. Did you feel, Antonio, when your brother left the club?
It was.
That's been weird for you.
It was weird for me. Definitely was weird for me when he left the club, obviously being a fan and understanding and how good he was and how important he was for the team. But then also understanding for him as a player, why he wanted to go, you know. So it was very, very hard for me. But you did feel as a fan, like you said, when he did leave, things just didn't seem the same way. You know, we was known for a team that played from the back, that everything came from the back. The minute he left, almost that changed. Do you know what I mean? It almost that type of the way we played changed, you know. And I think we had the personnel that we had, likes of Freddie, Trevor Sinclair, Paolo Di Canio, Lampard, Carrick, they wanted the ball on the floor. Joe Cole wanted the ball on the floor. And it was almost like that stopped happening as much. You know, and I think that's where the change was. But we had a team that, actually, was it the year after?
Yeah.
The year after was
Glenn
when Glenn Rhoda took over as a manager. For me, I don't know about you, he was a great coach.
Yeah.
For me, what was he like with you, Glenn Rhoda?
He was a great man. He was a great man, honestly. And I don't know if I can say that, but maybe too nice.
Yeah, you know? A lot of people say that.
Yeah, it was really, really nice. So maybe sometimes it was difficult for him maybe to impose a little bit the discipline he wanted to impose or what he really wanted to do, because he was really, really a great coach and a very good person.
Good.
There's a quote, I think it's by Arsene Wenger. They said that the talent West Ham had in their dressing room around the time you were there, they could have gone on to win the league if the conditions were right. You played in some great teams, like Seville especially, won a lot of trophies. Like, how do you feel looking back on that West Ham team? Do you think could have been different?
Yeah, no, for me, this is the most, I would say, one of the most or the most difficult part of my career. I'm talking about the year of the relegation.
Yeah.
For me, I still can't understand. You know, with the players we had, it's just crazy. I don't think it ever happened. I mean, it's difficult to give a value to the players who is better, but we had a fantastic team. It's a team that should normally play Europe. You know what I mean? And we got relegated that year. And for me personally, it was very difficult to take, because that last year I got injured big part of the season, and it felt like when you're a player, you know, you want to be part of it. And even if you get relegated, at least you rolled up your sleeves and you try to help the team. You know what I mean? And I felt like couldn't do that because I was injured. I was growing injuries, adductor injuries, and I missed big part of the season. So for me, it felt like I let the team down a little bit, even if it wasn't my fault. But it was a tough moment, honestly.
We'll talk about that 2002-03 season in a second. But the first season, the full season that Glenn's in charge, we do really well, finished seventh, and it was packed. Like, we were consistent all year, brought in the likes of Don Hutchison and Thomas Repka. How did it feel that first season? It felt like things were clicking. Could you tell in that first season with Glenn that the following season would be in trouble?
No. I think we thought that we were growing, you know. It was, this is one of the lessons football teach you, to be honest, you know, and you feel that you're growing, we do a few good recruitments in the team, and for some reason, the following season, it's not ticking. There's something not working. And I remember this is the first season, like, we got introduced about like a lot to discussions, you know, in to try to find, and I could feel it was a bit tense sometimes as well, and you know, when it takes that direction, you need someone really strong, and you need within the team, in the dressing room and as manager, to try to change the direction of that, because you could see where it was going, you know what I mean?
Really?
And those moments are really, really difficult. But we couldn't see 1 year before that it was heading that direction. Yeah.
What about when you got to pre-season, the season before the relegation season? Was there anything in pre-season? Was there any alarm bells at all? That preseason?
You taking me back to...
I know. The thing is, I think me as a West Ham fan, and a lot of West Ham fans who lived through that time, it was such a good team.
Yeah.
And the fact we were 42 points, it still comes up all the time, that stat. There's that. Never has a team been relegated with as many points.
Yeah.
And when me West Ham fans like myself, they just want to dissect it and understand what happened.
I think for us, it was even difficult to analyze and put the finger on exactly what went wrong, but it's just like, and we've seen with many like big teams and big clubs, sometimes when it starts going that direction, sometimes it's very, very difficult. When we talk about the crisis in the dressing room and stuff like this, it's more the journalists, to be honest, who like to bring. But if you're not strong enough and you don't do what is necessary to change the direction of the boat, it's sometimes you end up sinking, and And that year, that's what happened. But I can't explain more than that year.
I remember that year because that was the first year I started training with the first team that year when we got relegated. And I remember my first training session, I was up against you and Jermaine Defoe.
Okay.
You know, and I was nervous.
Tough day at the office.
I was nervous.
And I was asking myself, this is crazy. How many Ferdinand this club's going to produce? This is...
But I remember coming in and training with you. And as a fan, I knew how good you was.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I started training with you and playing up against you, I was like, wow.
Mm.
But for my first session to be with you and Jermaine, you know, how did you find playing with Jermaine? Obviously, Jermaine, big man.
Yeah.
How do you find playing with Jermaine? Because to defend against both of you was sometimes unplayable.
Yeah. Well, Jermaine, I always considered him for my little brother. It's mm-hmm. like he was younger than me and so talented. I think he got on loan to Bournemouth. And he was scoring goals for fun. And they tell me, oh, there is one player coming back from loan, et cetera, very talented. And I saw straight away,
really?
this kid was like a pure number nine, you know, in and around the box.
Yes.
It was crazy.
Yes.
It was really, really crazy. And I think it was good because we had such a different style that we got on well straight away. He was more selfish than me though.
Yes. Yes, that's for sure.
When he was passing me a ball, I know German was doing that. When he was passing me a ball, I could score. He was passing me a little bit too long. I can cross it back to him. But he needs to know that I knew his trick all along. And but very, very, very talented. And we had two different styles, so it ticked straight away.
We had yourself, Paolo, Jermaine Defoe, and Ian Pearce is up front for mm-hmm. a good deal. The central defender, Ian Pearce.
Yeah.
How did it feel to be sat on the sidelines carrying an injury, watching a defender take mm-hmm. the place that take the top spot up front?
Yeah, I mean, those characters is one of the, like, for me, Ian Pearce was like the typical, like, English with the strong spirit
mm-hmm.
and you learn a lot from those players, to be honest. It was interesting because he was very, very strong, very tall, mm-hmm. so he could hold down the ball, he could do some different things. Definitely I would prefer him more at the back.
Did you do shooting practice with him? Did anyone know he was a good striker?
No, I don't think how this thing came about. I don't remember.
There's one thing about that relegation season. This is something that West Ham fans talk about. There's a sliding doors moment. I don't know if you are aware of this, but right at the start of the season, Arsenal at home, we're 2-1 up, mm-hmm. and you get a penalty to make it 3-1. We miss that penalty. We draw the game 2-2 in the end,
mm.
and we don't win again at home until January,
mm.
like into the next year. And that's something that West Ham, it keeps me up at night. When we got relegated and after that, all that summer maybe, was that something you thought about? Is this something that...
The thing is that when you get relegated, you start thinking of all the games that you've missed and you thought at the time that, okay, this is bad, but okay, we have time. But no, sometimes it's just like, you kind of tend to go backwards and say, oh, that game, oh, maybe it's because of that game. We were so close. And, at the end of the day, it doesn't help you to just go backwards like this. And as a professional athlete, you always have to look forward. And but it was tough. Yeah, it was tough.
But right at the end of that season, I think every West Ham fan thought we'd stayed up. We had that great win at Chelsea in the last game of the season at Upton Park. But the game before that, away at Main Road, Manchester City, we've established you're quite a laid-back player, but you scored the winner that day.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen you so passionate, pump in the air. You could see how much it meant to you to score that goal.
Yeah, it's crazy because that season, at some instance, as you say, it didn't feel like a team that is being relegated,
mm-hmm.
Winning those big games, etc., playing well some games and having so many points as well. it didn't feel like sometimes, that's why I think it was hurting even more at the end.
I remember that feeling and ran out of time because I was training a lot with you guys and I was traveling here and there. I remember that feeling of like, it didn't feel like we was in a relegation battle. Yeah. It didn't feel like that at all. Like the camaraderie was still good.
Yeah.
You know, playing well here and there, playing good football. It never really felt like that for me as a young player coming in. You know, like normally a young player coming into that type of environment where there's a relegation battle, normally it's hostile.
Yeah.
You know, but it wasn't like that for me. Yeah. When I've been there. So I can really relate to what you're saying.
Yeah. No, I think at no point of the season it was hostile, but you could just feel it was a bit tense because you could feel that, oh, okay, we're playing with fire now. We're better than this, you know? We have to have more points now, you know? We don't want to be in that situation at the end of the season. So I think we could feel that, but yeah, we didn't think we were going to be relegated.
Do you think that was a bit of overconfident because of the talent that we had?
This, as I said, you know, football is teaching you big time. Yeah. And maybe there was a little bit of that. Maybe.
I've got one question. Sorry, Chris. I've got one question. Why Tottenham? Why?
I thought we were going to forget about that.
No.
That part.
No, why Tottenham? Why?
To be honest, you know, that season, obviously the club relegated, trying to sell as well, you know, is even, you know, financially sell players that can be sold, etc. And it happened to a few of us, you know what I mean? And me not being from London, I don't have the same, you know, no, I can never sign for that club or that club. So for me, it was an opportunity to stay, obviously, in the Premier League. And it still hurts me until this day to leave that club at that moment. Not only, to be honest, because I signed Tottenham. We know footballers, you know, they need to, especially when they're not from that city, they don't know all the level of rivalry there is, etc. It's after when you look back, and I stayed like 5 years in England, I understood more and more the rivalry between the clubs, etc. But it's true that for me, it was a way to carry on and push my career and try to play at a level that I wanted to play in. And that's it, really.
Yeah, well, like, what you went on to achieve at Sevilla, I mean, it's just incredible. The trophies you won, was it UEFA Super Cup, UEFA Cup, you nearly won the league, the Copa del Rey, you actually, you were La Liga top scorer one season as well.
No,
close?
At the end, I missed a few games and I couldn't, so I finished second or something like this, second.
But the form you were in, the goals you were scoring at Sevilla, I was always thinking, I could have been at West Ham. Could have been at West Ham.
Yeah, I mean, it's for me, the way my career progressed. Sometimes I was thinking of that. Oh, it could have been in England. It could have been in West Ham. It could have been, you know, because I think that's, you know, there are some. How can we call that? Early developers and late developers.
Yes.
You know. And I think for me, I was always learning throughout my career. And I think around 27, 28, that's when I was like at my peak, not far from my peak. And that's when I went to Seville. But I think my last year in Tottenham was very good. I felt really, really good. Didn't score so many goals, but I felt like so good. I gave many assists. I could feel that I was reaching the best moment of my career. And sometimes I feel I think about that. It could have been also in England. I could, if I had stayed that year, but yeah, definitely in Seville, in Spain, I really, really enjoyed my football. It was a different approach. I really enjoyed playing my football over there.
And, the weather. Oh. That to be the weather.
Slightly better than East London.
The weather was slightly better, but yeah.
Was the Spanish League, the comparison, everyone likes to compare the La Liga and the Premier League. For you, you played in both and done well in both. What league was better for you?
to be honest, early 2000, 2004, these years, 2005, I like to follow Spanish clubs as well, La Liga, because I've always liked, you know, more technical football. And now there's no much of a difference because now, you know, it's all international with yes. coaches from abroad coming here as well. I found that as soon as I arrived there in Seville, it was like, you have to enjoy. You have to touch the ball. You have to get in contact with the ball. And that's, for me, it resonated like big time, you know. And we had maybe a little bit more, I would say, freedom to express ourselves. Even training ground, everything almost was with the ball. As soon as you arrive, we play a little rondo and we make fun of each other. It was something else. Also with the weather, it's another atmosphere altogether. And it went really, really well over there. Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was a bit different. In England, it was a little bit more physical and direct at the time, especially, you know, early 2000. It was still, yes. there were only a few clubs that really wanted to play the ball on the, otherwise the other clubs, it was a mix, but many direct balls, etc. And in Spain, it was more the other way around. A few clubs that were playing direct football, mainly clubs from the north, like Bilbao, etc. They were playing sometimes a bit more direct and strong. And clubs, other clubs that would put the ball on the floor. And that's much more technical and tactical. So I enjoyed it as well.
Yeah. Before I start asking you about like modern West Ham, I just want one final question from your playing career. So many characters you played with, Harry Redknapp, John Munker, Nigel Winterburn, just full of characters, Neil Ruddock as well. Give us your best story from all those mad characters. Who was the maddest? What was the maddest thing you saw when you played with West Ham?
In West Ham, there are too many. No, there was some stuff. I can't say everything, but there was a few episodes. You know, I have to admit that Neil obviously is a legend, but I didn't know from the face and from, I didn't really know him. And when I arrived in West Ham, he was not training. So I thought, and he was a certain age at that time. Mm-hmm. So I thought he was like maybe a staff member or something like this, you know, no disrespect.
Yes.
And because I saw him in the bath, in the sauna, etc. I said, oh, okay, maybe he's, and he was not training. And on Saturday I arrive and he's changing in the dressing room. I said, this guy is a, and after I said, oh, okay, that this is a legend, you know, and I didn't know, you know, and, but yeah, John Munker did so many stuff like this, you know, and, you know, once in the winter, he arrived only with his boots.
Yeah, I know the story. With the snow.
Yeah, yeah. This kind of stuff. It was crazy. But yeah, no, a lot of stories like this, yeah.
Yeah. So when West Ham obviously won the UEFA Europa Conference League in Prague, did you watch? Were you still cheering on the Hammers?
To be honest, I watched some games. I don't watch all the games, but I watched some games and I was really, really happy about that. I thought it could be a big, big boost for the club that is doing well for the last few seasons. Still struggle a little bit to have this consistency, but it's building. It's building. And yeah, from afar, I always follow a little bit, yeah.
Wanted to ask you about African Player of the Year. You won it in 2007, and we've got Mo Kudus. It feels mm-hmm. to me that he's got a real chance of winning it. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I've discovered him not so long ago. He's really, really talented. He has everything. He has strength, running forward. He can play different positions. Mm-hmm. Still quite young, but I think he's one of the most exciting African footballers around these days. So yeah, it definitely has a chance for me.
Yeah. And you're a busy man these days. You're still in football, right? You're one of the top football agents and you've got your foundation.
Yeah.
You're a busy man.
Technically, I'm not an agent, but I have an agency, but I'm more of a football consultant. So I've passed my badges in here in the UK and coaching badges. And I work more on youth development level in Africa. So I'm a consultant for a couple of academies there. And so my job is to make sure that those kids develop well. And for those who are more talented when they're 18, they can come over in Europe. So that's why I have an agency that look after them as well, to make sure they are looked after properly. And that's what I'm doing. But it's still very much passionate about football and the game and the way we have to play in the academies I advise, for example. I'm still very much involved into that, and might also come back a little bit more into coaching, because this is something I enjoy doing. So yeah, I'm doing several stuff right now.
Yeah, and you're living in London, right? You
live in London? Yeah, I live in London, yeah.
Wow. Well, for me personally, I just want to thank you, because when I first started training the first team, if you would have beat me up, I may never have had a career at West Ham. So I just want to thank you for allowing me to come into the first team when you was here. And I remember you used to speak to me a lot, you know, if when we was playing, when we was training, you'd speak to me a lot, you know, so I want to thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Because as I said, the way you was as a player, I thought you was so underrated, you know, and when I started training with you, I realized how much of a threat you was, but you could have also stopped my career, because if you would have bodied me in training, my career would have
Look, don't be so humble. You're talented, and that's why you made it, and you deserve it. And you, we were speaking just before, you know, and what is more important, you know, these things that we keep, like the good relationship we had, and as a player that is a bit more experienced, helping the youngster coming, etc. At the end of the career, you remember those stuff. More than, how good he was. But little things that, there was a helping hand. There was someone who helped you. There was this. And this can help you beyond football. You know what I mean? Sure. And at the end of the day, that's why we're talking about youth academies, etc. We have to, we have to do our best to help people grow as people, not only as footballers. So if if you remember some positive stuff, I'm happy
100%.
With that.
100%. Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, Freddie, thank you for the chat much. And if you unearth the next Mo Kudus, call West Ham. Do not call Tottenham Hotspur, okay? And we'll forget about the whole thing that happened in 2003. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Freddie Kanute. Cheers, Anton. And thank you for listening. We'll catch you next time on Ironcast. Until then, come on, you Irons.
Podcast Network.